Appreciate that a lot of the good work that goes on in these meetings was going on right there, and I hate to shut it off or interfere with it. We have some folks who have some confidence and need to leave a little early, and we'd like to get as much done as we can in the interim. So thank you for being here. I'm Don Leonard. I'm chair of the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council, and we appreciate your being here. Let's go around the table and then go through the audience here and introduce ourselves briefly.
Sure. Jake Vanderlaan, Division of Water Quality.
Randy Elliott, Davis County Commissioner.
Hey, good morning, Chef Richards. I represent Michael Clayburg Collectioners.
I'm Dave Livermore with the Nature Conservancy, representing conservation interests.
Tom Ward, representing municipalities and the city attorney.
Carlton Christensen, representing Salt Lake County.
I'm Jeff Scout, Fox Elder County Commission.
Laura Brennan, Forestry Fire and State Lands.
I'm Brian Cotton, I'm the Director of the Division of Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Marcel Shoup, National Wildlife.
Ivy Hogan, National Wildlife Field Sanctuary.
Phyllis Hansen, National Wildlife.
Jen Strickland, Legal Women Voters.
Anne Deville, the Nature Conservancy. Ariel Collins, Western Resource Advocates.
Linda Fredos, Friends of Great Salt Lake.
Ryan Nicholson, SWCA.
Jeff Lukowski, Rio Tinto, Kennecott.
Corey Angroff, the U.S. Geological Survey.
Big Sky, Utah Rivers Council.
Tom Tripp, U.S. Magnesium.
Rob Hartman, U.S. Magnesium.
Father Baldwin, Pacific Corp.
Laura Olt, Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Jamie Barnes, Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Bernice Egbert, Division of Water Resources.
Lisa Patrini, Division of Water Resources.
Rusty Hurley, EA Consulting.
Todd Bingham.
Todd Bingham, Utah Manufacturing Association, representing the extractive industry.
Thank you. And I represent the aquaculture industry, the brine shrimp cooperatives. Thanks for being here. We do have a quorum in attendance. I had two of our members asked to be excused, Dan Tuttle, who is out of town, and Leland Myers, who is at a meeting with legislators this morning. So you were provided an agenda prior to the meeting. Hopefully you've reviewed it. I'd entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Thank you, Dave. Is there a second?
Second.
Jeff? Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Good to start out with a unanimous vote, right?
Yeah.
We have two sets of meeting notes to approve because at the last meeting, your chairman failed to get approval for the March 3 meeting notes. I apologize. So they were sent to you in advance. I'd entertain separate motions first to approve the meeting notes of March 3, 2017.
So moved.
Thank you, Jeff. Is there a second? Carlton? Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Any abstentions? I should have asked if there are any corrections to those notes. I'll ask for July 12 meeting notes. Any corrections or additions? Great. Let's entertain a motion to approve the July 12, 2017 meeting notes.
So moved.
Thank you, Jeff. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dave. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, let's move to our first presentation on Great Salt Lake Parks. There are actually two state parks that are within Great Salt Lake. Great Salt Lake State Park, which we commonly refer to as the Great Salt Lake Marina, and Antelope Island State Park, where we're sitting now. A few years ago, the state consolidated management and made Jeremy Shaw, who was previously manager of Antelope Island State Park, they made him dictator over all state parks within the Great Salt Lake. Did I get that title right?
That's
pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So we asked Jeremy if he'd come and tell us a little bit about Antelope Island and Great Salt Lake State Parks. A few facts and details, a little bit about what's in the works and what the plans are going forward. Jeremy, you're on.
Okay, so thanks for coming out. I apologize for being a few minutes late. Nobody is ever on time to Antelope Island. So I was actually walking out the door when Wendy called and said, "These guys are here," and I went, "Nobody's ever here on time." So I hurried up, so I apologize. I fully expected everybody to be 15 minutes late. I think the gate is the island, and so it takes some time to drive out the causeway. So I apologize for showing up a few minutes late. You guys got me off guard. Welcome out to the island. I hope it's not all of you's first trip out here, but if some of you, if it's your first time out, welcome. I'm just going to go a little bit over Antelope Island, just a little bit over Great Salt Lake State Park, what everybody calls the marina a little bit, and then maybe just plans for the future, what we've been doing, and then if you have questions, we'll just answer those as quick as we can and get you moving forward. So I've been here about almost 7 years now. So when I came out to the island, we saw about 285,000 visitors a year. This year we'll see about 450,000. And so everything's growing like crazy for us. 28,000 acre island we manage for watchable wildlife. We've got a visitor center, gift shop. Hopefully you guys got to see some of the new displays we're just finishing up, which are super cool. We've got three campgrounds. We've got a historic ranch museum down on the south end of the island. And then we do most of the search and rescue out on the lake as well. So we work with Brian Shrimp Co-op a lot. We work with tons of duck hunters and the duck clubs and stuff like that, just to make sure that everybody out on the lake is safe. The big draw for us, visitors-wise, is the wildlife. People love to come see the bison, the bighorn sheep, the deer, and the antelope, pronghorn for sure. And so we've got two wildlife biologists on staff that manage that aspect of the park for us. They're fantastic. All of our populations are booming. Everything is going super well. We actually had a great big fire last year, burned just about 16,000 acres of the island. Steve put together a reseed plan. We got seed on the ground. It took off like crazy, and everything's doing great. I'm happy to report that all of the seed that we went down is growing. We had a better auction than we've ever had before, and all of the populations look good. In fact, DWR is actually making plans to transfer some more sheep off here next year due to the numbers that we've got. So everything's going really well. A lot of the stuff that we've kind of changed recently since I've been in here anyway is we geared a lot of the programming and stuff that we do to locals. And so we're trying to do more things every week to get local visitors out here. When I first started, all of our surveys said about 70% of our visitation came from outside this local area, which is kind of the Wasatch Front right here. And so we started kind of gearing ourselves towards doing programs that would give folks something to do here locally. Mountain biking has exploded in the last 5 years out here. You can come out in the spring and fall especially, and there's hundreds of mountain bikes out on the trail. We started doing some ranger-led hikes, some star parties, some stuff like that, just to get locals out and about. And it's working, and people really appreciate it. The other thing we did is we built another campground out on Lake Finger Point that is just tent only. That was one of those things that we really didn't have. We had a good spot for RVs, we had a good spot for groups of scouts and stuff, but we didn't have anything for the car campers that were traveling through. And those are the most popular sites on the park. Those things fill up like crazy. People love them. And so that's kind of some of the stuff that we've been tweaking a little bit as we move forward. Jumping down to Great Salt Lake really quick. Like Don said, State Parks decided to complex the two parks a few years back. We had a park manager that was getting ready to retire down there, and they decided to kind of join us at the same time. Sounded like a good idea at the time, right? Everything Great Salt Lake. And it probably was, other than the harebrained new state park manager took a perfectly good little marina and turned it into a park. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I kept driving out there when they first gave me that assignment. I kept driving past that old empty building at 7200 West, right there off of 80. And I thought, no, it's like a perfect good state park building. So I pulled in, and it had been vandalized, and the windows were broken out. And I thought, man, that's even better. It's going to be cheap, right? And so I started finding out who owned it, and we found out that it was owned by a subsidiary of the church. It was a construction company. We were able to get them to donate it to us. And then I scrounged up enough money from our administration to move it up the frontage road and put it back together. So then we started looking for ways to actually turn it into a visitor center and gift shop. We wrote a grant to Kennecott, to Tinto. We were successful in doing that, and they gave us about $35,000 to set the thing up as a gift shop visitor center. And that's what's sitting down there today. And 400,000 people walked through it last year, and it did about $350,000 in sales out of the gift shop. So if that a little bit was good, then a lot was better. So then we had an old parking lot off to the side that was basically just that slag from Kennecott and stuff that was off to the shoulder, and we figured that was a great spot for campsites. So as we were putting into the camp, the visitor center, we just brought the sewer and the power along the parking lot, and we roughly had 5 campsites that back up to the lake. We made sure that they all were oriented so that you could see Animal Island out of the door, right? And they're full 200 nights a year. So some of the little things that we've done down there that have made a huge difference. I always said this is a really, really nice place if you have a sailboat. If you don't have a sailboat, there really was no reason to go. Well, now there's a really good reason to go. And lots of people are. We're pulling tons and tons of traffic off of the highway down there. Moving forward at GSL, there's really not a lot of room. So I don't know what the next plan is, but I'm sure it'll pop in here eventually. Yes, sir.
So quick question. On the automobiles, how many do you see every day visitation-wise or year-wise? You said there was 450,000 that visited the island. How many vehicles were those?
I don't know right off the top of my head. Okay. We've got a really complex matrix that tells you how many people are in the car, mm-hmm. at what month, what time of day, all of this. I could actually round it up for you. I'll get it to you, because every month we do a car camera.
Okay, that'd be
so
great.
I just go back and tally them all up for you.
Okay.
And what we do is we take the number off that car counter and we put it into a program that's been designed for us, and mm-hmm. it tells us usually in October on Wednesday there's 2.5 people per car, and then it calculates it all. Okay. Yeah, but I can jump them all together and get it to you. Yeah, and tell you how many cars came across. Because we'll do cars and buses, tour buses, stuff like that.
Okay.
So moving forward for GSL, I don't know what the next step is, but I'm sure that it's out there. Moving forward for Animal Island, honestly, our biggest focus right now is to take care of what we have. Everything we've got is 50 years old. Saturday, we had a major power line break underground somewhere on the island. It was the second one of the year. They typically cost between $5,000 and $10,000 when they break. And it's just old buried wire in the ground, and it just wears out. First time we dug it up, I was with the guys from Rocky Mountain Power, and they uncovered this great big wire buried in the sand. And I said, ooh, that doesn't look right. It doesn't have sheathing over it, doesn't have insulation over it. And he goes, that was great in the late 60s, early 70s. When they put it in, that was state-of-the-art stuff, and it had a 25-year warranty with it. It's just 20 years past its warranty. So I said, well, what do we do? And the ground wire is wrapped around this great big power wire, and it breaks. And they just jump across it, and then they wait for the next weakest spot to break, and they jump across it. So I think I've been here 7 years. That was power line break number 8, I think. We've replaced 2 transformers in the same time. So stuff is just kind of getting old. So rather than add a whole bunch of new stuff to Antelope Island, our focus over the next couple years is to kind of improve what we've got. Make the stuff that we already have better. Our visitation's going up like crazy. Our revenue's going up like crazy. Our expenses are going down very, very little. But we're still going in the right direction. But rather than add more stuff to take care of, we'll try and take care of the stuff that we've already got. And so you'll probably see us try and fine-tune some of the programs we've started, fine-tune some of the mountain biking stuff that we've done, and maybe buff up some of the trails, create some features and stuff for those folks, and probably just refine the rules that manage how we use the island. Horsemen, mountain bikers, and hikers, we try to put them all on the same trail. That's not always a good combination. So as we move forward that way, we'll try and tweak those things so that everybody can kind of multi-use those trails together. And that looking forward to hosting 500,000 people. As soon as we get the infrastructure tied in, then we look at what does the park look like when we see 500,000 people. And that gets huge. That gets into better roads with bike lanes and paved pullouts. A good example is Yellowstone. You do get those traffic jams with people pulling off the sides of the road, but anywhere there's a feature, there's a paved parking pullout for people to kind of try and get out of traffic. We don't have this here, so we get bison traffic jams every weekend. And they'll pull off and they get as far over as they can. It's just that there's only an 8-inch shoulder, and so they're still halfway out in the road. And one bison comes over near the road and it shuts the whole park down. So as we start looking past what we already have to 500,000 people a year, which I think will probably hit fairly quickly, then we have to start looking at bigger, broader stuff. That would include probably Commissioner Elliott's question about the causeway and how many cars come across it. On a typical Saturday, we'll back traffic up to the first intersection just because we've got one lane coming in and people show up like crazy. Tonight at 7:30, we'll back 20 cars up because everybody wants to come out for the sunset. So redesigning a park that typically saw 200,000 or 300,000 people, and probably when they opened it up originally, they never thought we would. Even when they redid the causeway in the 90s, and they probably never thought that we'd be seeing 500,000 visitors. So after we dial in all of the stuff here close that we've already got done, then we start to look at how to expand.
You're one of the few parks that covers your budget with revenue?
We're probably one of about five or six that actually make money. We've got a couple of, our accounting office in Salt Lake is a little bit hard to understand. But last year we turned in about $427,000 more than we cost to run. Now, part of that is the deer hunt money. About $360,000 of that 427 was that deer tag. So I can't say that we made a whole bunch of money operationally at the gate, but we'll take $1 million in through the gate this year. And that's a lot of cars at $10 a car. And then you add the deer hunt on top of that and a record bison auction last year. Last year our bison auction was right around $460,000. And then the deer tag was another $365,000 to $400,000. So there's a lot of revenue coming through there. But you take the deer hunt out of there, we still cover our budget by $40,000 to $50,000. So we're actually making the state money. When we do throw the hunt money in there, then it makes it look really good, right? And I can tell everybody, $427,000 more than the cost to run. The flip side of that is that money goes into account, and then the next year we'll spend that money and they'll show it as an expense. And so it's hard to kind of compare one year to the next rather than kind of keep that hunt money separate. We add it all together and then it gets confusing year to year. Perfect example is we've got a really cool project going on down Island above the Field and Gar Ranch right now. And we're spending probably about $600,000 of that hunt money on the habitat. We're doing a drinking system. So we're doing 100,000 gallon in the ground tank. If we buried, you wouldn't be able to see it from the road. And then it'll fill from the springs that we developed. And as it fills, it will filter down the hill and it will fill drinkers as it goes. So we've got about four drinkers that kind of crisscross the hill. The first two look like a big manhole. They hold a few hundred gallons. And then once that manhole fills, it will drain through the middle and it will go to the next manhole. So it disappears underground, it bubbles out of the ground to the next one. The third one looks like a big concrete river that snakes its way across the hillside. And it's only about 18 inches wide and about 18 inches deep because we don't want to give the bison something to wallow in. We want them to come in and get a drink and leave. And so that one will do the same thing. It starts at the head of the concrete river, it runs across the hillside, it disappears into the end and comes out in another river 1,000 yards away. At the final one, it's got a big pond at the end, and when it draws down, it will radio to the tank for more water, and it'll send water through the whole system. And that's the design. The reason we designed it that way is we don't want the bison congregating in one spot on a water source all the time because they beat it to nothing. And so this is designed to let them come in, drink it down, move to the next one, drink it down, make their way across the hill, and then it calls for water and fills the whole thing up again. So. I told Steve, our wildlife biologist, who I always say the best biologist in the state works for state parks, but I told him design something that Texas cattle ranchers will be out here looking at saying, man, you guys did it right. We need to do stuff like this back there. And I think he did. It's going to be fantastic. So as far as I know, it's kind of one of a kind. Came out of Steve's hand. So that's some of the exciting stuff we get to do. Some of the fun things. Yes, sir.
Building on Don's question, so for the future infrastructure improvements, for instance, the electric system you described. Mm-hmm. So all those improvements are slated to come from your revenues, no general fund support. Is that kind of understood in the park system that you're on your own?
Pretty much. So that money all does go back to Salt Lake, and then they decide kind of what we do with it. So yeah, I think parks gets that. I don't know that it ever is going to come this way or not. It might slowly, but I think, you know, the money that each of those parks make all go into their savings account, whatever it is in Salt Lake. And then each year they decide we're going to spend this much on capital at these five parks. And so, yeah, eventually I think we'll chip away at some of that, you know, smaller stuff. But we've got 43 state parks. We probably, I don't know what our backlog is for maintenance, but I'm sure it's tens of millions of dollars. And so even the $400,000 that we turned in last year, if you divide it 43 ways, there's not a whole lot of money there. If you only divide it 5 ways, there's still not a whole lot of money there when you're talking about, 11 miles of East Side Road that needs redone in bike lanes. You know, that's probably $4 or $5 million project right there. Stuff like a full hookup campground would be, I tell a lot of people when they come out, I say, we get 100,000 campers a year out here, and we don't have a flushing toilet in a campground anywhere. And all the ladies go, oh, and all the guys go, yeah, it's not so bad. But stuff like that. So full hookup campground, we just did one in Moab last year. That's a $5 million project. So that's a lot of years, good years, turning money in to just do something like that. So I think we'll chip away at it in-house like that, but I don't know if that's the end-all be-all or not. But it's fully understood. Everybody that works out here gets that.
One last question. Carlton?
So I was intrigued by the fact that when I turned on the faucet in the restroom, you had good water come out of it.
Yeah.
What is your water source?
So we've got a well right here. Just as you come over the last bridge to the island, there's a well sunk right there. And it's potable, it's tested for health standards and all that stuff, and you can drink it, but it sort of tastes like it came out from underneath the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah.
It did, but it's, drink it, it won't kill you, but it's not delicious.
You get your drinking water elsewhere.
But so most of the drinking water that we have in the facilities is like Mount Olympus bottled stuff. Yeah.
One more, Nate.
Yes, sir.
In terms of management, I know the hunting issue was pretty controversial a few years ago, and I guess there's an ATV issue coming up, and how do you propose to manage these different uses?
It's a really good question.
Are they separate zones of the island? So
no, they'll overlap, but I think the hunt is such a small window of time, so the hunt was when I showed up in my office, there was one piece of paper on my desk, and it was from our director saying, make this hunt work. And the old manager, that's what he left me. So I took over in July, and that very first hunt was in November. And I was ready, man. I had areas for people to protest out by the marina. I figured PETA was gonna show up. We were gonna have a great big to-do because I had heard so much about it. And then the old manager left and just went, there you go, kid, go ahead. And honestly, it came and went pretty quietly. The way that hunt is set up, or any high dollar hunt anywhere is set up, takes about 2 hours. And so honestly, that comes and goes so quickly that the hunt opens by noon that day, the hunter's typically gone. And so if there's an OHV program that ever takes place out here, we would have to work that probably around the hunt, because it's easy to just say we're not going to do OHV stuff on this Monday in November, and by noon you typically could probably open it up. But I think that would be the easiest way to do that. The bigger question is going to be, if they decide to put OHVs out here, what kind of impact are those going to have on the wildlife? And to me, that's the bigger question, because we're on an island. We're not up on the Wasatch Front, where when you spook an animal, it can run to safety. If, for instance, the OHV trail were on the west side of the island and they spooked an animal up over the top, well, they just spooked them to the road on the east side. And then a tour bus full of German visitors comes by and spooks them back to the ATV trail, which spooks them back to the... So there's nowhere to go. We're on an island. There aren't any of those safe zones to escape to. So that would be the bigger question. And if you ask my personal professional opinion, I don't know that there is a good way to manage both of those things simultaneously, because one has to negatively impact the other. There's really not. There's not a way around that. That's inevitable, I believe.
Tom, can I ask a question? Jeremy, did you?
I try and talk fast, but it
really
just runs
question.
And runs and runs.
Do you have a master plan, a long-range financial plan? And that's the first question, yes or no?
Yes.
Second, okay.
Resource management plan.
I need to ask the second one.
So we have a resource management plan that we're supposed to update about every 10 years. Ours is due to expire in about 2.
Is that available online?
Yes, okay. On our website. Yeah, you can get all of them for every park on that website.
Thank you, Jeremy. That was great over here.
Sorry I was late again. I tried to talk quick, but sometimes...
Right on time.
And all right, good.
Dynamic leader out here. We appreciate all you do.
Thank you very much. You guys enjoy your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next agenda item is presentation and discussion. Last year, in discussing possible topics for consideration by the Advisory Council in 2017, we identified the Sovereign Lands Management Account, also known as Restricted Account, as a possible area of interest by the Council. Why? Because the fund is the recipient of about $10 million a year from Great Salt Lake Industries, yet little of that fund is returned to the lake. It's important to understand, I think, the specifics and the facts regarding the creation of the fund, the purpose of the fund, the amount of money, where it comes from, where it goes. And so I thought, before having a discussion about what if anything, we'd like to do about the fund and issues related to the fund, that we'd have Brian Cottom, who's the director of the Division of Forestry and Fire State Lands, and is responsible for that fund. Thank you, Brian. Hopefully you can educate us on the facts and details.
Thanks, Don. I'm gonna ask Laura to hand out for you that should help the conversation a little bit. And really what I'd like to do is have this as much of a discussion as you want it to be. So interrupt me at any time. I don't have a formal presentation, but just some highlights that I'll touch on that hopefully will help you better understand the Sovereign Lands Management Restricted Account and how the funds are used. Also know that we're gathering, we have it all available, but we're gathering from Don all the details. He's asked us for some real specific information. We've got a new finance manager, and so where our previous finance manager could have done this in a relatively short amount of time, our new individual, it would just take a little bit longer. But we are gathering a bunch of information for Don, and then, however, it's public information. It's stuff that you could find on the legislature's website right now, deep within the catacombs of their budget web pages. But we'll get that for you and then decide what other discussions you all want to have. Take a look at that handout. And we've used this for a few years, and it's basically just an overview of what the Sovereign Lands Management Restricted Account is. So you've got the information straight from code there at the bottom of the first page, a little bit of information about how it's used. On the second page, a quick discussion about where the fund balance is at, where it should be, and then some information about how some of the most recent funding that the division has received and some of the priorities that we've identified through strategic planning for the next few years. So a big picture overview about the fund. But I want to say this right at the outset, and it's kind of a signpost because I'm going to come back to it in a few minutes with the remarks. The Sovereign Lands Management Restricted Account is not ours. It is not the division's. Anything that we spend out of that account, or anyone spends out of that account, must be appropriated by the legislature. And for us, we have to go through the Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee. Every state agency has an appropriation subcommittee that they work with, makes budget requests to, and that subcommittee then approves or not the use of those funds. So anything that we're spending out of the Sovereign Lands Management Restricted Account, I'll just call it the Restricted Account from now on, has been appropriated by the legislature and ultimately by executive appropriations. They're the ones that will approve the budget bill and then the legislature passes it. It is always, this is kind of an aside, but I think it's of interest. Every single year, we have to clarify that information with at least one legislator that serves on our appropriation subcommittee. Every year, at least one corners me and starts to grill me about, you guys have millions of dollars to spend. We have no control over that. And we say, no. You have all the control. These are the appropriators, the people that make the decisions. So there's a lot of misconception about the account, even with the people that appropriate the funding. The other thing to realize, and this is what sets apart our restricted account, the Sovereign Lands account, from others. Although you see the language on here that says what it can be used for,
There is not language in code that really limits how this restricted account can be used. So over the years, funds from the restricted account, not to speak to even specifics, have been used for all sorts of purposes across state government. Because state code, the intent language, when this account was created, we say somewhat tongue-in-cheek, you can drive a truck through the intent language. And it can be used for anything. The principal purpose, as it states there, is to pay for the management of sovereign lands through our division or otherwise. And a great deal of the money is used for that. But a great deal of the funds are also used for all sorts of other purposes. For the most part, they're natural resource-related purposes, because again, it's our appropriation subcommittee that kind of has the oversight of this. And so the agencies who report to our appropriation subcommittee are DNR, Department of Ag and Food, Department of Environmental Quality, CITLA, and Oakland's Policy Coordination Office. So when our appropriation subcommittee takes money out of this account, it's typically to one of those other agencies that has an environmental or natural resource interest. But I think it's that point right there that's led to some misunderstanding and maybe some heartburn, even in our agency, about how the funds are used. Because I can tell you this at the outset, the majority of the funds that come into this account don't get put back on sovereign lands. The vast majority, in fact, it's a minuscule amount that actually goes back onto the ground. And that amount is increasing every year. And it's vastly more now than it was even 5 years ago, but it's minimal. All right, let's shift a little bit. Our division budget is primarily funded in three ways. It's about 30-30-30-10. So the Sovereign Lands Management account funds a third of our division, federal funds, and then dedicated credits, the work that we do to put out fire and are paid for, or that we go and do a land management project and are paid for with that. And then 10% of our budget comes from the general fund. And that amount is actually shrinking every year, whether in perception or actual real dollars. Less and less of DNR's budget comes from the general fund. We're really fortunate with our division to have this restricted account. Without this, I'd hate to even think where our division would be without the restricted account. It makes a huge difference for us. But kind of understand that about a third. So what that means, we have, and it changes from year to year because of fire suppression costs, but we get about $6.6 million a year ongoing from the restricted account to support the operations of our agency. And that doesn't all go to the Sovereign Lands Program. Again, in our division, we manage state sovereign lands. We have statutory responsibility for fire suppression on all state and private lands. And we have the state's forestry program within our division. So $6.6 million is already appropriated, and so it's called ongoing. Every year, we know we are going to receive that, unless the year before the legislature makes some decisions to take some of that money away. And that happens every now and again, about $6.6 million. I'm going to keep looking at my notes here. The Sovereign Lands Management account over the years, and this one's pretty interesting, I might actually just send this one around. It's really been the last few years that the revenues have started to increase. And it's probably important to point out the vast majority of revenues in the Sovereign Lands account come from the industries of the Great Salt Lake. Probably, Laura likes to say 99%. That's probably true. Certainly more than 90% of the revenues into this account are from the industries of the Great Salt Lake. But any revenues that we generate from any of the permitting, like we have dozens of permits, access permits for the Colorado and Green Rivers, the portions that we manage, but they're 50 bucks a pop. And so that doesn't add up in comparison to the millions that the industries of the lake put in. But for the last few years, we're averaging about, I don't know, $10 to $11 million a year. The last few years of revenue into the account. But you can see, and this starts in 2000, and I'll send this around, how it's really increased over the last few years. And then the recession hit and it bounced around a little bit. But right now we have been projecting the last few years into the next couple of years about 10 to 11 million. One of the things that happened a few years ago, and I know this is this is certainly one of the things that Don wanted me to speak to. That account, as the revenue started to really ramp up, got to a level over 20 million where legislators start to pay attention. Legislative fiscal staff starts to pay attention. Whenever any account in state governments gets to 20 plus million dollars and there's very little intent language about how it can be used, what do politicians do with that money? They spend it. And that's where I think a lot of the like a concern for us, but for a lot of entities, it started to rise up about 3 or 4 years ago. In the last 3 or 4 years, that account went from 24 million to just a few million. It really got depleted for all sorts of purposes. Now I'll say this, that was our fault. Our division should have been seeking that funding. And we do that through the building block process, the new money request process, through the governor's office and then the legislature. But we are first at fault because we did not do the planning we should have, and we did not do the work we should have done as a state agency to go and request that funding for the work that we want to do. We are seeking and receiving, since I've been director, far more funding than the division ever has from the account. And I believe that's correct. That's what we should be doing. In statute, we have the responsibilities for managing these resources for forestry, for fire. And so we are going and seeking this money to support the work that the statute and the legislature tells us to do. So that's one of the changes that's happened over the past few years. But during those years, particular legislators and even that appropriations subcommittee started to realize there's a huge pot of money here. We can use it for anything. There's all sorts of needs. So let's start pulling from this. One of the examples that's on that handout that we sent around, when the federal government closed a few years ago and national parks shut down, this was the first big, some people call it a raid on the account. This was the first time it really happened to any extent. But this was the count that the account that the legislature used during special session to reopen the national parks. It was this restricted account. And they took, I think, $8 million out. The vast majority of that was returned to the account because it was unused, but the funds that were used to reopen the national parks have never been put back into the account and likely never will be. It'll take an act of Congress to replace that money. But it's an example of how it has been used and could be used moving forward.
Brian, can I ask you a question on that thing? So was the number 4 in the statute, was that added after the rating of the account for 2013? Number 4 is what says the legislature may use the funds for national parks, national monuments, for basically emergencies. What you're referencing here for the government shutdown, was that added in the, it was added in the 14th session, which I believe that's when it was added, unless
somebody can correct me. I think there's sunset, like, I think that sunsetted or sunset, or however you say that. I don't think that language is still in there, but they
You are correct.
It's still there.
I think it's, well,
that might not have, yeah, maybe
regardless, it was done probably the session after
they pulled it out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which begs the question, how has the authority to pull it out? So,
because there was nothing in code that said they couldn't. And that's what our attorneys always remind us about in any of our conversations about code.
Number 3 is pretty clear.
It says what it does, but then often if it's not clear about what you can't do with it, then
so was number 3 added then too? Because that basically what you've referenced here is all expenditures of the division related directly to the management of state lands shall be funded by appropriation by the legislature. So we know, I mean, you're right, that's the way it's always been. There's misconception, but your funding comes to the legislature and they tell you use these funds directly for state lands, but.
Yeah, so within our division, all of our sovereign lands program is funded by this account. And then portions of our forestry program, very small portion, and portions of our fire program, not suppression, but the administration, the operations of the fire program. And although I don't agree with it, more and more of our fire program is being paid for out of the sovereign lands account.
And arguably with that number 4 there, for any emergency for fire in the state, they could pull funds from this.
They could, yep. They have never pulled suppression money from this account. And it will be interesting this year because of our fire season, particularly one fire, the Bryanhead fire, I'll have to make the largest supplemental fire suppression cost that the state has ever made. It's going to be a $20 million request. It's money that's already been spent. The legislature's going to have to pay the bill. The largest ever. And I'm sure that in conversations behind the scene, they will look at this account as one way to pay that bill. I believe there should be a bright line. The industries of the Great Salt Lake should not pay for wildfire suppression in the state of Utah. Absolutely not. But I don't get to make that decision. I get to make the argument, but not the decision. So you are correct. It can be looked at for anything. So some of the ways it's been used then, again, particularly over the past few years, say the past 4 to 5 years, as our subcommittee, that number got so high that, of course, legislators and staff started to look at that account. Start with the $6.5 million that's base budget for us. That comes every year out of the account. And you can start to do the numbers in your head. If we're generating right now about $11 million, and $6.5 million comes to the division, and in the last few years we've been very, very assertive, at least in comparison to the past, about other funds that we request, and typically they're referred to as one-time requests, project dollars, like the Phragmites money that's been coming consistently from the legislature. There actually is an ongoing pot of Phragmites treatment money, but then every year we're going back and asking for about $500,000 for Great Salt Lake specific Phragmites treatment. But that's one time. They won't give it to us ongoing, which I'm fine with. We get to go back every year and report on progress and ask for it again. So we may ask for, I don't know, up to $2 million each year for project monies that would come out of this account. Start to do the numbers in your head. DNR, our parent agency, the department, we're one of 7 divisions in DNR, gets just over $2 million ongoing from their restricted account for things to support the work in DNR. Not our division, but things that certainly we believe in and would support. But that's $2 million plus dollars a year ongoing. So where are we at now? $6.5 million, it's ongoing to us. We might ask for a couple of $1 million more, $8.5 million, DNR gets $2 million, and all of a sudden we're at $10.5 million, and the account generates about $11 million, we're all of a sudden even. Which means once the account got, say, bottomed out, that's not exactly true, but once it went from $24 million down to a few million, we're now running about even in what is spent out of the account every year, what's appropriated by the legislature, and what is generated in revenue. And then the legislature, this just so you have a sense of the numbers, since 2009, the legislature has used the account variously from year to year in ways that have ranged from $0 up to $10 million. There was one year where they spent $10 million from the restricted account on things that were not even related to DNR. So just completely otherwise. Again, agencies that report to that appropriation subcommittee for the most part, but it would have gone to a lot of it, the Public Lands Policy Coordination Office, to be honest, because it's all public information. So does that give you kind of a sense of where the money goes? And who makes those decisions? And I promise you folks, we are, I've already said it, but we are far more aggressive in going and seeking dollars for our division, and particularly Sovereign Lands, even more specifically for the Great Salt Lake, than our division ever has been. The other thing that started to shift in the last few years, probably just the last couple of years, after the account really got bottomed out, and we hit a point, and it's always fluctuating through a fiscal year, but we hit a point where there were probably about $1 million in the account, actual, $1 million. And fortunately, some of the legislators on that appropriation subcommittee, our key staff, our legislative fiscal analyst, a fellow named Vaughn, he's the gatekeeper for us to be able to get money, they saw what was happening and realized that the cash cow was gone, money was gone. And the conversations, and this is good news for us and I think everybody in the room, the conversations now with the legislature are more about how do we protect this account as opposed to just how do we spend it? How do we make sure that there are some funds left in to actually do management on sovereign lands as opposed to just spending it out the door every year? And one of the questions that we're asked every year, and Don and I talked on the phone and he asked me a question, he said, well, what could the advisory council do to be helpful? We get asked by the legislative fiscal analyst every year, it's the same question every year, I give them the same answer every year since I've been director of how much money should be in the account, how much money should be maintained in the account from year to year. I believe as the director that it should be approximately $13 million. I would like to see that, that's where it stays at. I would like to see 2 years of funding for the base budget that we receive. And I do that kind of from lack of, I set that bar for the staff. Because if something were to go horribly wrong with the national economy or with the industries on the lake and the revenue was not coming in, that could at least give the division staff that are funded through this account 2 years to make some life decisions and go look at other options and opportunities. But $13 million is what I believe. And so really what that means is it needs to be between $13 and $19 million. Because every year we're gonna spend at least $6.5 million on ongoing funds just to support the operations of the division, the existing staff that are here. So $13 million is what I would like to see in there. I believe we're past the worst of the recession and the downturn in some of the revenues, and we hope and our projections continue to maintain about $11 million. We could get the account back up to that amount and hold it there if the Appropriations Subcommittee chooses not to spend it otherwise. Because we have as a division actually this year, last year, we've started to dial back some of our requests. We're not asking for quite as much, recognizing that I wanna be able to tell upon $13 million and then not go ask for $10 million myself. So we're trying to be as conscientious as we're hoping the legislature will be in terms of this account. Those are kind of the highlights. What other?
Let's go to some questions here.
Absolutely.
Jeff?
Has anybody approached a legislator in the past and said, hey, it's time to clean this up? Because, I mean, that's the issue we had with some of the transportation funding. The language in there was obscure enough that you could drive a truck right through it, like you mentioned, and it had a great intent, but it was messed up. And so just to clean it up and say, boom, this is why it was created, it's for sovereign lands. Period, end of sentence.
I'll tell you a story, and it's to answer the question. The short answer is yes. And I won't name names. I won't say who the look. You'll probably know who this is. My first year as director, we clearly recognized the limitation of statute and what was happening to the account. Because it had started probably a couple of years even before I became director, at least 1 year. So we recognized the most expedient way to deal with this is to get the statute changed and to tighten it up. And the first year co-chair, the House co-chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee, you're thinking, aren't you trying to figure out who that is?
Well, I already know who it is.
We talked to this individual, and he was really supportive of tightening the language. And in fact, we have draft language that we have provided him, and we've provided to others since then to try to do exactly this. And he was receptive to the point where he said, yeah, I'm going to run this bill. He might even run a bill file. But then he began to realize as the co-chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee what that might do to his abilities. that was the place that he, particularly as a co-chair, could find funds to fund other things. And that maybe is a little cynical on my part, but I'm sure there's some reality to that. So he backed off and the conversation just died. But every year, we probably talk to somebody about this. It just doesn't go really in depth. And what we're hoping is that the general discussion now amongst committee members, with committee staff, that they're realizing this thing has been drained. We need to protect it. The current co-chairs seem to be a little more receptive to that. We're hoping that we're turning the tide to something. But a statutory change is the permanent fix to it. If you think it's a problem, I mean, there are many people that don't think it's a problem that this account can be used for whatever. But if you think it's a problem, then the statutory fix is the best way.
The problem is, Brian, there are no restricted accounts anymore. I mean, this is a restricted account that the legislature has raided for a long time, and there's no motivation for them to tie their hands to it. You know, the former Senate Appropriations Chair had pots of money all over the place that they could find, and don't confuse yourself too, legislative fiscal analyst's job is to find money. That's what their job is. And Yvonne is very good at it and has found money in all kinds of spots. I think you have an opportunity right now with the current Senate chair. Senator Stevenson lives in the backyard. I mean, he's this is, you know, for all intents and purposes, his district. And I think there's some opportunities to do that. But I would agree with you that a restricted fund, restricted account should be a restricted account. And those funds that are being generated, in particular by the extractive industries who, you know, that I'm saying I represent, those funds need to go back to sovereign lands. And they need to be used for those projects that better the lake and for wildlife purposes, extractive, and sightseeing the whole bit. So, you know, Don, I think we need to continue the effort and continue to work with the current Senate chair and see what types of effort we have there. But
so let me put on the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council hat, because you suggest the money needs to go back to sovereign lands. When Laura gave us our introduction to the fund last year, she did tell us 99% of it comes from industries around the and on the lake. And the conversation then was, well, we ought to at least get 20% of that earmarked to the Great Salt Lake. Well, if we did that, it would be coming out of your
operating budget.
Because 20% of your budget's not going to the Great Salt Lake.
Correct.
Maybe, what, 1%, 2%?
What do you think, Laura, of the restricted account, how much actually goes into sovereign lands? I apologize, I should have asked our budget person this question. It's only a few percentage points.
6.6, how much goes?
Yeah, of the 6.6 million, how much of that is specific to your program?
Probably less than 2.
Maybe 2 million?
Maybe.
And that would fluctuate year to year based upon the one-time requests, but I mean, probably ongoing is about 2 million is going to sovereign lands.
This year we asked for 500, or of the 6 million, yeah, less than.
So interestingly, that's about 20% each year, but it's not all back into Great Salt Lake.
That doesn't give us money to do Phragmites and other lake projects we're talking about, really. That funds your activities regarding Great Salt Lake.
Yeah.
It's not incremental to the lake. Doesn't really take money that's not going to the lake now and put it back at the lake. Dave, you had a question?
Actually, a question for Todd, who's great experience in this area. So, should there be no restricted accounts of gas tax? What about hunting license fees?
Yeah, I mean,
there are, how would it be?
I generalize that there are no restricted accounts, but the Appropriations Committee has the ability to pull from pretty much anywhere.
Even the gas tax?
Yeah.
Let's go back to the roads.
Yeah, they bounce money out of gas. Historically, they've bounced money for gas tax for other types of areas. Now they've started to crack down on transportation funding recently and the method by which that happens. But there's very few sacred hunting licenses.
How about earmark? So there are funds earmarked rather
yeah,
than?
Yeah, there's.
I mean, our royalty earmarked. Goes to the Endangered Species Mitigation Fund.
Yeah.
Another way to look at it, because in DNR there are some really restricted accounts that can only be used for specific purposes, but that does not mean the legislature, as they did with our law, or the law that impacts this account, couldn't change the law.
Yeah.
So it was the after the fact where they put in national parks, they had already appropriated it, but then probably somebody asked the question, can we really do this? Let's just change the law so we can do it.
Yeah.
So that's another way to go about accessing restricted accounts. Not that that happens a lot. I don't want it to be too simple.
It's complicated. I say that we really ought to focus on that. Don, my biggest area was not necessarily saying, I agree with what you said and getting some of the percentage tied back to the division for sovereign lands, but the rating of the account is the bigger concern for me. I mean, because as you continue to rate the account, it's impacting everything. I mean, we may only be 2 million of that for the lake, but when you keep raiding the account, don't kid yourself, it's going to continue to happen because it's a pot of money that's sitting there.
The challenge is the legislators that are raiding the account don't believe they're raiding the account.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your word, not theirs, so it's a...
They think they're really using emotional. The money for rightfully so, really good purposes.
Sure. Yeah. Like RS 24/7 roads, resource management plans, Utah Prairie Dog litigation, Transfer of Public Lands Act,
sage grouse. From one legislator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We know that.
don't put that on there.
I have a question relative to the revenue generated, and that's coming from the industries that operate on the lake. Are there parts of management of the resource that if we fail on that front, your industry's bottom line, and hence the fees that you put into the state's accounts to reduce, you're killing the golden goose? And to that degree, it seems it'd be foolhardy not to make sure that is secured so that the state can do what it needs to do to keep the lake healthy, at least from a financial perspective, and the rest of us have a horse in that race too. But I think the legislature would have, if they're going to kill the golden goose, then nobody, if there's, dividing zero is a pretty easy math, right?
Yeah.
Is there something in there that either Brian or Don or Todd, that we can hang our hat on and say, if that dialogue's going to happen at the legislature level, so they know that there's a reason beyond us asking?
The whole question is fascinating, and we talk about it internally all the time, and I may not directly answer the question, but it just comes down to values. If the funding source were to be harmed and all of a sudden the revenue is not there, then it poses the question to the legislature, is the work that is being done on these resources worth being funded from some other place? Is it worth pulling money away from school children or from transportation, all the competing interests to pay for the continued work? I hate to think actually what the answer to that would be. That's why I say we're really fortunate to have the account. We certainly talk about it internally and talk with legislators about that.
Kind of the angle I'm thinking, I'm sure there's a myriad of ways to look at this, but if, I'll throw one out there, that keeping water flowing in the lake allows you to do, which, if you have a dry lake, you're not,
no question.
Nobody's meeting here, right?
Yep.
In a different society. And to that end, appropriating revenue that keeps water flowing to the lake seems prudent from just a business perspective, a bottom line for the overall health of the state of Utah. And I would say everyone else in the room, whether it's from an environmental perspective, a municipal perspective, benefits from that. And up on the Capitol Hill, they'll benefit by having a sustainable revenue that feeds the industry that keeps it going. And even if there's other trappings that get taken off to fund other Great Salt Lake or your division's needs, we've secured our basic core in that regard. There may be other elements. I'm just throwing that one out because I know as you have the last grab over the next 10 to 100 years or the remaining water that flows to the lake, it's going to get divvied up. And then it's going to get smaller pie. And I think I'm here at this table. One of the reasons is to assure that the health of the lake that affects municipalities, and I'll take off my work hat, just overall the lake, is if there's no water, there's nothing to argue or fight for. So I think that would be an element we're gonna have a dialogue with the legislature, if we can say, you know, and I can on a napkin do some math and say you do a certain project, it's gonna lower the lake by a foot. How does that impact your industry, and how does that impact the revenue that goes to the state? And if we can say that makes sense for us to spend that money towards that resource, the water resource, the water right, seems to be a win-win-win around the table. And we lock up some of the revenue, maybe indirectly, to your division's purpose and needs. Just some thoughts.
Which ultimately is the same needs that we see from
other questions or Dave?
Maybe as a related question, at one point you presented, and Sally, thank you for taking the time, it's been very helpful, talking about your budget as a whole, where other agencies submit budgets, and there is I can't remember how I heard this, but kind of example, if you all want to put a new sign down in Utah Lake, you have to kind of wait until appropriations, there's no kind of budget.
You are remembering correctly. We have started to figure out ways to address that. What he's speaking to, and this is changing to some degree because of the work that we've been doing over the last couple of years with legislature and staff. A few years back, it was not out of line for us to say that Laura Ault and the staff even though we manage 1.5 million acres of sovereign lands, 2,200 miles of shoreline, that we did not have a fund to simply manage the lands, to simply deal with emergencies that came up, an operations budget. The monies that we did have that were ongoing had intent language that were very specific about what they could be used for. And the example that we give, and in fact, Laura was telling me about another one as we drove up this morning, I don't remember what it was, but the example we give is a few years ago.
Dirt on Galena.
Yeah, how are we gonna pay for that? We put up new signs at Bear Lake in cooperation with a lot of the folks up at Bear Lake. I mean, it wasn't us being regulators. And within a matter of days, they had swastikas. Every one of them painted swastikas over. Well, we don't even have a budget to go and replace the swastika signs. That, to me, as the director, as the land manager, that's baffling. That is a failure on the part of past division leadership to not go and find that kind of operational money. Laura hounds me every single year, and we're starting to get ways, and really the way we're doing it, because we've asked, 2 years in a row, we asked, give us simply a pot of flexible funding to deal with emergencies. And we had a whole list, a page full of real things that had happened, and we couldn't get that even past the legislative fiscal analyst. It goes back to Tom's question of what are your values? There is an implication there that managing sovereign lands is of no value. We have a lot of fascinating conversations with the legislature. It became clear I was not gonna be successful in getting that kind of operational budget. So instead, we've worked with our fiscal analyst to reallocate some ongoing appropriated funds and broaden the intent language on those specific monies to be used for sovereign lands management purposes. Just figuring out other ways to deal with that particular problem.
Jeff?
Two quick questions. If I remember right, the impact of the Great Salt Lake to the Utah economy is roughly $1 billion a year.
1.3.
How much money are you talking about as far as just a miscellaneous or emergency fund? $200,000, $1 million, $1.5 million? I mean, your wish list.
I think that 1 year, we asked for $50,000.
Seriously?
Oh, seriously.
I think there's years we didn't ask for anything.
There's years we haven't asked for anything, but the couple of years that we were really concerted to try to find this kind of management funding, I think probably 1 year was 50, 1 year was 100, and now we've just figured out how to do it otherwise. It's so tens of thousands.
$50 million would be dreaming.
So $50,000 to $100,000 on something, and it's not off of Great Salt Lake, obviously,
yeah.
But the pure impact on the economy, and this is just Great Salt Lake, this doesn't take into account Bear Lake, Utah Lake, the other waterways, and $50,000 to $100,000 is a stretch.
At this point, we're not going to get that approved. But I don't want you to get a misunderstanding. We have lots of other pots of already appropriated money, so we go ask for one-time funds to do project work. But what we were talking about is a few tens of thousands to just deal with land management needs. It would be the same. Y'all are familiar with the Forest Service. Take the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest and take their operating budget away. It's the very same thing. But they would have pots of money that are specific. Okay, you can hire this employee to simply do this thing, or this year we're going to give you $300,000 to do Fred Mighty's. And so that's how we operate. That's how we operate, and we are being successful as a division, and the legislature is being supportive of us. But there are some things that should have been dealt with in years past by division leadership.
Last question, Jeff.
Has anybody ever tied the revenue coming out of, looking at your chart, it looked like it went up and then it looked like with the recession maybe it dropped down.
Yes.
Has anybody ever tied the revenue coming in to like level in any way?
To the
level of the lake? I mean, the distraction industry I'm kind of thinking of mainly where you get to a point, does it sort of taper off with lake levels or? You just get a point.
That's fascinating. I looked at Laura Alton, she's shaking her head no.
Most of what we've dealt with, it's commodity, right? Commodity pricing doesn't directly tie the level of the lake.
For the magnesium.
Yeah.
1984 through 87, we were restricted in our production because of the flooding of the lake and impugned our raw material. In fact, the state worked with us and they reduced our mineral royalties for a period of time, less recovered. So there's been that kind of interaction.
Yeah.
Generally, the revenue is related to forces outside of the lane, although I could envision times where there could be a significant fraction. It's not been that in the last 2 decades.
It would be interesting to just overlay those two graphs, though.
Yeah, we could do that, but I think Compass Minerals, the last couple of years,
yeah.
They would be a different case.
It would be a different story.
Probably. Yeah.
So probably. we could put that together.
Because I could see hitting a cliff where you get, the lake is just so low that, you know, it doesn't, economically doesn't make sense.
And sometimes the problem is that, so, like, you're filling ponds, but you're not taking that product for a couple of years. So sometimes it's not like you have to look out if you're going to catch that dip a couple of years out.
And those individual conversations we do have between staff and the industry, lake level, the impact on their business. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to just overlay those two graphs.
Last question, really, Tom.
Just a thought on that. I know I really like the matrix that the division did on lake levels versus health.
And the management plan?
The management plan one. And I'm trying to remember if there was a like an industry fiscal one, and like kind of where you're going is you get to this level, there is no water to have vine shrimp or attractive industry. It becomes kind of a cliff. Help guide us and interact with the legislature and others.
Tom?
That matrix does have a sweet spot for the extraction.
Certain levels.
Above this, it's not good.
Does it have a dollar on it, though?
No, it doesn't.
It needs a dollar.
Okay, let Brian wrap it up, and then we're going to talk about where we go from here.
So thanks for letting me have this conversation. I think you all expect this from me. I'll be pretty forthcoming when I come and speak with any group. But I really believe we have a good relationship with the legislature, with our legislative fiscal analyst. Laura and her staff do an outstanding job of planning and bringing good projects annually for us to request money for. The legislature and that appropriations subcommittee has been good to us. There are some weird things that we're dealing with, but I don't want anybody to leave here thinking, oh, there's this confrontational relationship. It's probably as good, if not better, than it's ever been.
Thank you, Brian. I think the question is where we go from here. This has been really helpful to me today from an educational standpoint. That education started when Laura Ault made her presentation to us last year, and Brian's added to that. As Brian referenced, I've asked the division to provide some really detailed information on where the money comes from and where it goes in great detail, and I expect to get that before the next meeting, and I'll share it with the advisory council. My recommendation is we take what we've learned today. We take the additional information that we'll receive in the interim, that you take the opportunity of time between now and the next meeting to check with your constituents and talk to them and get some sense of what kind of will there is out there to proceed. And then the next meeting, let's talk about what, if anything, we can or should do. And I think it'll be an interesting debate. You've heard today a little bit about some of the back and forth, and I think we can get more into that and decide what, if anything, we as a Great Salt Lake Advisory Council should do to address those issues. That'd be my recommendation, but I'm open to some other path. Any other ideas? Good to go? Have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Dave. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Carlton. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. It's unanimous. Okay, clock's ticking. Last meeting we received a draft report from our consultant on our report, Water for Great Salt Lake. We took two actions in our last meeting, as reflected in our meeting notes. First of all, we requested that the consultant reopen the report to give an opportunity for some additional submissions, just in case someone thought we weren't serious the first go around. We were also encouraged to reach out to agriculture and to the water districts to see if they'd be willing to submit. Brian Nicholson's here to give us an update on that process. I'll ask him to do it quickly and what was added and what wasn't added. So, Brian? By the way, the revised report was sent to you when the meeting notice went out a couple weeks ago, so it's got an August date on it.
Should I touch on the prioritization?
No, so this is the first one.
Okay.
Okay,
sounds good. Thanks for the opportunity to come back. As Don said, we reopened the review of the draft plan, and we wanted two things from people. First, were there any additional strategies that were left out from the first round? And secondly, we gave people the opportunity to read through the descriptions that we summarized to make any corrections. So we received 7 responses, 2 of which asked for revisions. And one of them had to do with some issues about agriculture, lining canals, water savings through those kinds of strategies. The other revision had to do with clarifying water quality standards and code around water quality standards. So of the 5 who offered new strategies, 1 actually offered 2. So that's how we have 6 new strategies. So we've jumped up from 66 to 72 strategies. And just a quick review, one person suggested adding something about protecting groundwater levels. There was also a strategy about phasing out property tax subsidies. A 3rd in-lake bed storage reservoir. This next strategy was divided into 2, a more clear strategy regarding education, and a strategy that allowed for voluntary contributions of funds for in-stream flows and other similar projects. And then finally, some new information about permitting and how the state permits projects around the Great Salt Lake. Okay.
Thank you, Brian. By the way, the 6 new, if you want to look them up in the new revision, it's number 11, 12, 17, 62, 63, and 70. Too fast, or we're good? 11, 12, 17, 62, 63, and 70. You might ask, well, why are they scattered numerically? Because the report's broken down in different categories, and they were placed in the appropriate category. So the second action that we took at the last meeting was to ask the consultant, asked Brian to draft a list of possible criteria to help us either rank the strategies or identify those with consensus. You may recall we started a discussion with what do we do with this report once it's final? Do we use it as an educational tool, put it out for people to use, or do we use it as an advocacy tool? We didn't come to any conclusion. We did decide we'd like to talk about what criteria might be used to decide which strategies would have our support and which might not be so important to us. And so So Brian came up with some questions or a few others that are not his authorship that are on there. And I'd like to have a brief conversation about whether you think these are the types of criteria that would be appropriate. Then I would recommend that. Then I'd recommend that we talk about what kind of approach we'd like to take. Whether we want to try to just have our consultant rank them, or whether we'd like to put our arms around it and try to come up, identify some consensus items. For example, I went through the 72 myself and found, I believe the number was 37 of them that I felt I could support. I found 16 of them that I wasn't sure, didn't understand, didn't know enough. And then the balance, I thought, no, that's not a good idea. And so I was able to do that on my own. It's a bit of a chore because it's a long report. What I think I'd suggest we do, and we can talk about it in a minute, is that Brian's also prepared a Cliff Notes version. And what it is just a list of the name of each one with enough information to get an idea of what it is. I would suggest perhaps we send the Cliff Notes version to the council and take a poll and have you identify yes, no, maybe on your own personal view about them. And you can seek input from your constituents. And we can do it on a non-attribution basis. So we can accumulate the answers and bring them back and get some. That'd tell us really quickly which ones rise to the top and which ones don't, as far as members of the council. And you can use the criteria we've got outlined, or you can use your own criteria in that regard. The other option, like I say, would be to go and have the consultant make a ranking from 1 to 72 using criteria that we adopt. So you want to run through the criteria for us quickly, Brian?
Sure.
And I'd welcome quick yay or nay on.
I was just going to suggest if we go down the road, you were suggesting perhaps staff could throw it into something like a Survey Monkey or you could do that and have a place to make some comments so that it would be easier to sort of assemble it by question or something.
It's a good however idea. It ends up. No, I like that. That's a good approach. Laura's nodding her head, and she's the one that's going to have to do it. So if you're going like this, I'd be. Okay, Brian, quickly.
Okay, so these criteria come from, again, your discussion last time, and then also the limitations that were brought up by the people that contributed strategies. And they range, well, across the board. So number one, will the strategy result in a measurable increase in water supply to the Great Salt Lake?
Thumbs up, down. That's a no-brainer, right? That's a good criteria.
That's the number one
strategy. Yeah, that's right. It's at the top for a reason.
And we can come back and revisit these also because we might find prioritization criteria down below that maybe combine two or more from up above. For instance, is there still the kind of cost benefit that might satisfy some of the other strategies? Okay, number two, can the strategy be implemented under existing regulations and or laws? Is that something that's necessarily important?
Up or down?
I like it in the sense that it gives us the low fruit list.
Yeah. Low hanging fruit.
Why not make it more important that we get it done easy?
Okay.
So we're just having a discussion now. We're going to actually vote separately.
Yeah, that's my recommendation. You're going to do what you want to do, but that's my recommendation.
Because I would say that just because something's easy doesn't mean it's right. So, you know, if number one is the driver, that's our only driver. And we need new laws, But anyway, that's just my opinion.
Because doing one may require.
Yeah, exactly.
And that brings in number nine, then, to where you're talking about, Dave, is there political will?
Well, that's
you know, what can we do? You know?
Yeah.
The question right now is, do we have them on the list that we get to kind of give either a up, down, or a rank,
right.
High and low, yeah.
I don't disagree with you, Dave, by the way. But let's keep going.
Okay, number three, can the strategy be implemented with existing processes, structures, or operations? So slightly different from regulations, more of physical engineering, those kinds of processes. Maybe something needs to be invented or created.
Thumbs up, down? Todd, you got a thumb?
Yeah.
Hate to put you on the spot.
So let's
you're used to it.
Three so far.
Okay, four.
Is the strategy cost feasible? Is cost an issue?
Cost is always an issue. I think I don't want us voting on what the cost might be. I think as a consultant or a division could say what the cost is, and then cost is the cost.
So thumb sideways on that one?
Yeah.
Also, I would say some of these might be difficult to estimate cost right now for a variety of reasons. So maybe five, do the projected benefits from the strategy justify the cost of implementing the strategy?
So rather than cost can benefit. You afford it, it's mm-hmm. even if you can, is it worth the money?
Is it worth the money?
So, yeah. In my mind, I've worked in the consulting realm, worked with you on some things, and one way as I look at these questions, it becomes prejudice saying we're deciding it in or out at this point. I think once we decide, is it important? What is the cost? And that gives us something to focus on and chip away at. So I don't like having that question on this at this level. That comes out of the process once you have the matrix of saying, how much money do we have?
We might have the cart before the horse here, but at our last meeting, this was a task we voted to have them do, the criteria, and I thought the discussion would at least stir up in our minds, make us think about, well, what is important here?
So the question in this one is...
So that one's another thumb sideways or down? Everybody show your thumbs.
I think four or five kind of are
people. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to six then.
Does the strategy have minimal or no environmental impact to other ecological systems or services?
First, do no harm.
Do no harm. Everybody good with that, okay.
Does it check or thumbs
that's
up?
That's a plus, thumbs up.
Does the strategy overlap with recommendations from the Utah State Water Strategy? And that was something, again, which may encompass a lot of other things like political will.
There are three items on that list that are, I'm on the executive water task force that we're trying to move, and this group has its horse in that race, and there's others too, so that's a pretty good one.
So let's show thumbs here, because I think there's a little mixed. Okay, we're good.
Do you want to give a counter? Anyone want to give a counter argument to having it on the?
I think we got enough thumbs up. Let's go to eight.
Okay. Is there an individual or organizational champion for this strategy?
Do you care about that?
That's kind of the same as nine in a way.
You're going to have 70 different strategies and 70 different individual champions. So
thumbs down?
That's important. Okay. Yeah.
Number nine.
Is there the political will to implement the strategy?
I mean, I don't think we're the body to determine the political will. I mean, that's a legislative thing, but I think if it's the right thing, we at least recommend it.
Maybe that's an evaluation criteria after you come up with your list?
Yeah. I mean, it certainly would prioritize which you might choose first.
So is that a thumbs down or sideways?
If there's no political will, it won't get implemented if we need money, so I think it'll take care of itself.
I don't think it's broader than that. I think it should be, is there a likelihood of success, whether it's political or local.
I agree with Jeff, is that if we're talking about prioritizing strategies, which strategies we look at, we need to be thinking about what the political will is before we, in some regard, before we march down that road. I mean, otherwise you're just throwing money at, you haven't even thought about whether it's possible.
So should we put a, I'm hearing both sides, should we put a sideways? Or someone want to argue another? Okay, let's do that. Number 10.
Are the roadblocks to implementing the strategy reasonably possible to overcome?
Same as nine.
Okay, so let's exit.
And I think a lot of those roadblocks could be things like environmental laws, things like that.
11.
Can the strategy be implemented without unreasonably affecting one stakeholder group over another?
The answer is no.
It's always going to be
talking about water.
So that's not a criteria? Is that what you're saying, Dave? Show your thumbs. Okay, that one's out. 12.
Is the strategy likely to draw broad support from lake interests?
That's really the question of likelihood for success, right?
Yep, mm-hmm.
That's important.
Okay, is that a thumbs up?
And the final one, 13, are the benefits from the strategy likely to endure into the future?
So is it a one-time shot or is it ongoing?
Yeah.
That's important, isn't it?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Tom.
I apologize in the front side, but I've done a number of these type of taking diverse groups that are, it's kind of a, it's been started out as a lose-lose. It's a, and as I took what I saw SWCA doing here and back to the management plan that says, how's this impact the habitat or the brine shrimp industry or extractive industry or the birds and whatnot. What I envisioned or thought where you were going is for each of these questions, how does that ecological or financial or economic measure up on this strategy, right? And usually there's at least one stakeholder group that wants to see, yep, that's where I want to really raise my voice and see my little check mark there, right? But right next to the ecological importance of the avian, those that speak for that would be the industry, and they might check for some reason that we don't understand, also check the same one, say we like that one. Having done these studies as a consultant many times, you end up forcing people to leave the real issue, and in the report, you're gonna lose the fidelity of why we're at the table trying to preserve the Great Salt Lake as opposed to asking these questions at this point. I would rather have questions where each industry or community can speak to what's important to them and see that in the matrix. And to say today it's going to fail or succeed, I would rather say they're all opportunities, and think time will change. The legislature's going to change every 2 to 4 years. It changes the understanding of our needs or the importance of Great Salt Lake, that's going to change, and I'd rather that be in the document
than us having a fait accompli on what's going to succeed or fail. And I apologize for the long-winded, but I see just adding to and tweaking this just a little bit to give each entity here in this room or the group that they speak for, to kind of have, they can check off their rating. We're not going to do some magic math, and Brian's going to say that the score for this is 3.24. And I've sat on many committees where he did that to say this is the right answer. Where you, because you can go back to it each year and say, hey, this has changed. Is that making sense?
It is, but you're begging the question, what is the role of the council going forward with this report? So I think is it like the health report and the economic report that we put it out there, and both are widely used, and the economic especially widely quoted, and we put this out here and people can grab what they want and take it, or are we as a council going to identify some things that we're actually going to advocate? And I think that's the threshold question that this gets to.
Right, and so I see in the report would capture all that, but not lose the fidelity of each person at the table or group here speaking to how does that impact our industries, right?
So put it in a next step language for me.
So the next step I was wondering is like, because these questions that I was thinking of how they group, for instance, when you say, does it impact some other entity, I think it does it impact the extractive industry, or maybe go more succinct than that with the mineral extraction versus the brine shrimp industry. That two, yes or no, right? Does this impact revenue coming into the, you know, from the Great Salt Lake, you know, whether it's extractive, or does this impact the avian, the flyway, or, you know, and then not only do we understand how we align with each other on particular strategies, but then as time changes, we might be able to find a legislator that sees it our way, and see everyone sees their horse in the race. So you're asking me for an action. I think what I'm asking for is maybe a series of questions: is how does this impact the brine shrimp industry? I would say that.
Deeper than does it impact the industry?
And you only need another 6 to 12 on there, right? How does this impact the brewing community? How does this impact recreation on the lake?
Are we going to do that with all 72?
Well,
that's a huge. It'd be nice to narrow it down.
The management plan, the matrix, is the perfect. We already have a formula, right? We already said how does the lake level impact each of these little columns, right? I apologize, I've seen master plans just sit on shelves, and also I've seen master plans where an opportunity was missed, and 5 years after we missed the opportunity to realize how we could have got the ag community on board.
I don't disagree with anything you said, I'm just not sure what the next step is.
Can you take a first cut, and maybe we all look at these as red, yellow, or green, and then of the green, then you run it through another filter like you're talking about and drill down further on what's left in there, because that, you know, hopefully that green is not too big.
That's what's contemplated by the process is we do yes, no, maybe, red, yellow, green is the same thing. Come back, look at it, not let that be the determining factor, but that guide us on, hey, you know, why is there so many reds on this, and why are there so many greens here, and have that conversation.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking how the division handles this 5-10 years from now. We can take the same table, maybe add to this. In fact, you're going to change, some are going to change from red to green depending on lake levels or how things go or understanding of where we're at. But I also see somebody's going to require activity at the legislative level and community level. So as an advocate on different levels, it allows me to have the same piece of paper in front of someone who's very polar on one side and say, this is why you should support this. And the same piece of paper with someone else that disagrees with that person in principle, that this is why you should support this same strategy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I still want to come out of this and have me say, here's why you two are opposed, and paint people into corners.
Okay. I don't want to go in a totally different direction, but just another type of screening. That I think we should maybe consider once we do start talking about the green, the bill suggestion is to tie back in the hydrology model, because we put a lot of effort in 400,000 for the legislature to build these models of water resources, supposed to be able to run scenarios, and we've never seen any scenarios. I'll give you an example. Here's a strategy 14 is groundwater running. So Todd will say, hey, if you've tried to pass a law to prevent any groundwater mining, it would be a huge political brouhaha. So, but with a model you can see, well, what would that actually do? Would that increase the lake, you know, by 20 feet? It was exaggerated. Well, then maybe it's worth, you know, having the political friction. But if it only increases it by 1 inch, then obviously it's not. So I'd like to see some science brought into, and use the model we kind of lobbied for it, paid for it. So, sorry, we paid for it. The legislature paid for it. Taxpayers paid for it. Maybe the special fund paid for it. That's for a
future. Okay. I'm going to be mindful of the time here. Anyone who hasn't spoken have a comment on this? So it'd be nice to have a motion.
I mean, would it be, what are we talking about?
Well, my recommendation is we do the next step that we've been contemplating, and through a SurveyMonkey or some other mechanism, identify green, yellow, red. Yeah. And then bring that information back and use that as the basis for the conversation going forward, with Tom's points, and determine what, if anything, we want to do
further.
Let me
see if this is a motion that can stick. I'm trying to envision the management plan has, 12, 20 different columns on it?
There's like 30.
There's 30 there, okay.
Can we do the can we do the red, yellow, green first, and then come back?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. One step at a time. Sorry. Jeff Carlson.
Thank you. Any further debate or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Thank you. That was a good discussion. I appreciated that. I look forward to moving that down the track. Okay, we have. Next on the agenda, public comment. How many people from the public want to make a comment? Okay, let's give you, Lynn, go first.
Hey, great. I just want to thank you for being the advisory council. I'm really impressed with the commitment and the work that you do. And Friends is going to honor you at our annual fundraiser on October 19th. So you are an example of protection through partnership, and we really appreciate that. So that's my comment.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Lynn. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that yesterday at the Alliance meeting, I asked the consultants a great question about the possibility of using the tool to evaluate all of these ideas that you might hear, and he thought it was idea. And also ask what you can do it now while you're working on the thing, or you're going to wait until it rolls out publicly. And he said they're going to wait until it rolls out publicly. But I think we should talk about that. Because I think the critical issue is what is the optimum level or levels of Great Salt Lake, and how do we get the answer to that question in order to do all the marketing strategy.
Okay, thank you. Other public comments? Thank you for being here. We appreciate your taking the time. It's very helpful for us. Okay, next item on the agenda, member recommendations and actions. We've acted as we've gone along rather than pulling until the end of the meeting, but I'm willing to open this to any suggestions of future council meeting topics or actions, issues. Dave.
Have the technology model people show up and run some scenarios for us. Let's see it in action, not just have know the process. So.
My understanding is that it's at Division of Water Resources, and they're truing it up, doing some ground truthing, hoping to move it one step closer to being useful. I agree with you completely. Okay, last item of business. A couple of years ago, we adopted some new bylaws to govern how we operate. Those bylaws provided that we would, on an annual basis, have an election to elect our chair and vice chair. The 1 year time period actually came up at the last meeting, but we forgot to put it on the agenda. It was not a coup of any sort. We weren't, Dave and I weren't trying to secure leadership for an extra few months. In fact, just the opposite is true. Nevertheless, according to our bylaws, we need to elect a chair and a vice chair at this meeting, and so I'll open the floor to nominations or volunteers.
I make a motion that Don and Dave retain their seats as chair and vice chair, and then I make a motion that nominations cease.
We have an ill-reputed motion. Is there a second?
I nominate Todd.
I have a second from Jeff. Any debate or discussion?
Can I just rebut something?
Sure.
I do have a standing conflict with this council meeting with another Workers' Comp Advisory Council meeting that I serve on, and for some reason they happened to meet at the exact same time, so I'm trying to work through that, but today was actually good because it's a 10, other than the fact that it takes an hour to get back to Manitoba Island. So I do have that challenge, but I just note that there are occasions when I have to pick which meeting I need to vote at.
Let's vote on the motion to elect officers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Addressing the issue, so we've typically met the first Wednesday of the month. This isn't the first Wednesday, which is why Todd's able to be with us over noon hour. Any interest in addressing our time to try to accommodate? It's a can of worms, I know.
Yeah, don't.
Carlton, you were halfway up.
I was just going to say, I don't mind, shifting like a second Wednesday. If we did that, it would be a little easier for me if it were earlier in the morning, because I have a standing thing at lunch.
Let's second Wednesday, when you say earlier, like?
Like, I don't know, 9 or whatever seems like a reasonable hour.
So raise your hand if, as a council member, if second Wednesday at 9 works for you. Or doesn't, raise your hand if it doesn't work.
10.
How about 10?
We have been meeting second Wednesdays, right? The 12th was the second Wednesday of July.
Second Wednesday's good for you.
As long as it's earlier.
Yeah.
I was standing.
Second Wednesday at 10, raise your hand if it's a problem.
The only one I can potentially see is Commissioner Elliott. I don't know if that was a standing meeting. He had to be too late.
Well, let's try it for next time, should we? Next time we'll establish our meeting schedule for 2018. So our next meeting, instead of November 1, we'll have it November 8 at 10 o'clock. We'll expect you to be there, Todd.
I already had it on my calendar for the 1st, so.
Okay. You're gonna withdraw your motion now, right?
Davis County.
Let's check with that. If we're disassociating Commissioner Elliott, will revisit.
There's a Weber Basin annual conference on the 8th.
Got a problem?
Well, and we usually met at 12 because there's a conflict with that room.
That's true.
So maybe moving it to the second Wednesday, there isn't that conflict.
So you're willing to leave it with Laura and Dave and I to figure this out? We've got some parameters.
Earlier is better for me, like Carlton. The noon hour just seems to be a bit.
So if we stay on the first 10 is better than.
Yeah.
Okay. I think our next meeting is scheduled to be the Davis County Administration Building, so if we can get it. Oh, yeah. So briefly, before we adjourn. The state has retained Jeff Denblaker, CH2M Hill, to initiate a process of trying to determine how to manage the adaptive management tool in the Causeway breach. And Jeff's willing to hear input from anyone who has some input. They're trying to determine structurally how to move forward, what are their objectives, et cetera. Am I giving it justice, Laura?
Mm-hmm. Just that we are starting to convene a group of resource specialists to look at how to manage that burn.
So have you already asked people?
Mm-hmm.
Who in here has been asked? Okay, so you're inside the government walls still. You haven't gone out?
Right.
Oh, okay.
That's the process that he's in. This is the group that we talked about 1 year ago in this room. Mm-hmm. So the process is underway, and the consulting group is doing that outreach right now. We have made no determinations as to who should be on that group. That's the assessment work that's going on.
Okay, so the action item here is if you want some input and you haven't had it, contact Jeff Denblaker. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay. Anything else? Brian, we covered everything? Laura? Jake?
How about considering, now that the July 17th recommended state water strategy has been presented to the governor, to actually have a presentation about that? I know Tim Hawks did an abbreviated version during the process, but I think since it's so relevant to what we're talking about, it would be good to have one of the co-chairs, maybe Tage, or Warren Peterson, or possibly Tim, present.
Let's bring Warren in so we can harass him.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for that suggestion.
Yeah,
any others for the next meeting? Okay, motion to adjourn. Thank you, Todd. Is there a second? Thank you, Commissioner. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
Hey, thanks for being here. And I apologize for keeping you along by 15 minutes.
No.